yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yeah, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now, walk the streets a-screaming now. Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, you know, the news of the week here has to be this, well, let's call it, well, it's actually a double event here, and that's the clearing of Trump with, you know, the impeachment that occurred, the vote. Well, that was preordained. We knew that was going to happen. Of course, all the interesting development about a trial without witnesses or without documentation, right? What kind of trial is that? Well, it's a no trial. It's a non-trial. There was no impeachment trial. There was a discussion about having a trial, maybe, but not really a trial. So here we go. We've had this dog and pony show that's called impeachment. And Trump ducked again, dodged the bullet once more. And that, of course, was a major event week. But the other major event overlaid right on it, I believe, was, you know, the whole development with the State of the Union speech here. And I'd like to talk about the State of the Union speech in some more detail. I think it's very indicative of where we're going here in this election year, and it's tied in, of course, to the impeachment, because now the two wings of the corporate party of America are really in this food fight, you know, and it's going to get really interesting going forward. The other economic event, if we have time, we'll give an update on, is what's going on with the coronavirus in China, and most important, not just the biological contagion within China, a broader geographic area would be Asia, and then, of course, globally as well, is the economic contagion. What are some of the channels of that economic contagion we should be watching very closely here? And we'll talk about that a little bit if we have time. But I really want to focus on not the impeachment vote here. That's, you know, pretty much covered. Focus on the State of the Union speech, you know, the SOTU. That's an acronym, S-O-T-U, State of the Union, because that really tells us, I believe, more where we're going, where he's going, where Trump is going, where the Trumpublicans are going, because they're not Republicans anymore. It's Trumpublicans. So let's jump in and talk about that for the rest of the show here. Okay. I just wrote a piece, and I welcome people to take a look at it on my blog here, called Trump's Red Meat SOTU Speech, U.S. Political Crisis Now Deepens. You can also catch it on the Counterpunch blog and the ZNet blog and the Global Research blog, and I don't know where else, but it's kind of appearing in multiple places. So, in that, you know, the red meat. What do I mean by red meat? Well, it's really a speech aimed at mobilizing and agitating his base. It's an agitational speech. It wasn't a State of the Union speech. It was a classic agitation speech. Because of the normal State of the Union, what you get is a picture of where he intends to go with the president, with legislation or initiatives and foreign policy or, you know, other administrative agency developments. You get a picture. It's a State of the Union. Where are we? Where am I going to go in the next year? Well, you didn't get much of that traditional speech. You got an agitation speech where he's throwing red meat. In other words, he's throwing bones. He's ticking off certain proposals and positions and arguments aimed at his base, to mobilize his base. You know, when I was a much younger man, I was a union organizer. I started out with the Steelworkers Union. I won't go into the details, but I remember having a beer at a bar with one of the old-time steelworker organizers who taught me organizing. I went on and worked for the steelworkers and several other unions and formed my own local union in the communications industry for about a decade and a half. And I remember this guy teaching me, saying, what was an agitational speech? And it really stuck with me. And I remember his words, his description of the six elements of an agitational speech. This is an old organizer guy from the 30s, right? He knew his stuff. They taught me well. I was quite successful as an organizer and a local union officer. But what were these elements of an agitational speech? Well, let me share them with you because they are very prevalent in Trump's speech, which, as I'm saying, is a red meat agitational speech, State of the Union. All right, so what are the elements? One, if you want to agitate a base or a group, in the case of organizing driver, strike vote, whatever, right? First point, you point with pride. In other words, you point with, you say what we are and what we've done, and you make it look like you've accomplished things here and we can do it again, the implication of it. So you point with pride at what's been achieved. You view, point two, you view with alarm that those achievements, if we're going to go forward, are under challenge, under threat. Well, Trump expressed those first two points quite well, right? Point with pride. He started out with a lot of bombast and hyperbole about, the great economy he's achieved. Of course, it's all lies, except for the fact that the stock market has delivered trillions of dollars to investors and other financial markets. He talked about the best economy ever in the world and in history, right? And we're barely growing at 2%. Yeah, that's the best economy in the world. Just not true. Blatant lie. And he talked about job creation. He talked about wages. All lies. But that was, pointing with pride. And he talked about how he's appointed 187 federal judges two Supreme Court judges. Well, that's true. He really fulfilled that first agitational speech element, point with pride, view with alarm. Well, he went on to express how all this was being challenged by those evil Democrats, right? And, of course, those evil immigrants. Third point, the enemy. Who is the enemy? In an agitational speech, you must identify the enemy. And the enemy, of course, is the immigrant. And by immigrant, he means people of color. And not just all people of color, particularly Latinos, people from south of the border. That's the enemy. All ultra-nationalist and proto-fascist movements have to have an external enemy, and an enemy that's not just external, but that's in our midst, right? Beware. And that's the fourth point of an agitational speech. In other words, not just the enemy, point three, but the danger within. And, of course, that's fulfilled by the immigrant here. And the danger within extends not only to the immigrant, but to all those who would defend the immigrant, all those who would coddle the immigrant, the danger within. By identification in doing that, you become, you, of course, the Democratic Party, and all people who are supporting sanctuary cities, they are the danger within, and they're coddling the enemy. So we got first 4 points, point with pride, view with alarm, the enemy, and four, the danger within. The fifth point is identify with revolutions already won, great successes of the past. Right? And, of course, he went on to do that as well in this really sappy, soapy finale, which, you know, a guy with the intellect of Trump could not have written. You know, this is the American exceptionalism theme. That's the theme that identifies with revolutions. In other words, great changes of the past, right? Revolutions by that. I don't mean physical, actual political revolutions. I mean just these great change revolutions. So he fulfilled that with his American exceptionalism theme. And then the last point is theory of the dawn. In other words, we can do this, right? Our forefathers or whoever came before us has been done before. We can do this too. So we have these classical 6 points of an agitational speech in Trump's State of the Union. What we didn't get is a traditional State of the Union speech, which says, this is what I've achieved and this is where we're going. Well, he did say a few things about what's been achieved by him up to the present, but he left a lot of the onerous achievements silent. For example, he talked about trade, right? His great achievements on trade that he thinks are so great, the China Phase 1 mini deal on trade, and the NAFTA 2.0, or what's called the USMCA. But he didn't go into much detail on that, did he? He just sort of mentioned them. You think if they were such a great achievement, he would have dwelt upon them. But he didn't. He just sort of mentioned them and moved on. Why? Because there's no there in those two, quote, achievements. There's nothing really of meat, of meaning in the China-U.S. Trade deal. You know, I've talked about that before in great detail. You know, it's basically the China agreeing to restore its level of purchase of farm goods and imports from the U.S. It's the China giving 51% ownership to U.S. banks and companies doing business in China. You know, all the rest is pretty minimal. There's no real changes there going on. And, of course, you know, Trump keeps his $370 billion, $370 billion annual tariffs on China, and wants them to negotiate again. Well, there'll be no further negotiations with China. There's no phase two coming. That's it, all right? And what about the claim of $100 billion? They're going to purchase $100 billion. Well, even economists say, well, it's really only $73 billion. And that was said before we got the coronavirus and the collapse of China purchases of U.S. oil and gas and other other U.S. exports. It's going to be well less than $50 billion, if that. You know, already China is declaring what's called a force majeure, meaning all our agreements to purchase from the rest of the world, given our situation, have been impacted here by our coronavirus, which is shutting down big parts of the Chinese economy. You know, it's been estimated that the 2 to 3% of GDP is going to be shaved off its official 6%, which is already overestimated. It's really about somewhere between 4 and 5% GDP growth. So you can take 2-3% off that, China really is going to grow like 2%, and maybe hardly at all here in the first half of this year. Okay, so, he glosses over the China trade deal. It's because, he would have to open himself up to criticism on the details. The same thing with the NAFTA 2.0. Nothing there, really. Some tweaking of what the U.S. really wanted out of NAFTA 2.0 was for both Mexico and Canada not to subcontract out some of their production to China and elsewhere. In other words, there was an agreement and a change in the new 2.0 of North American content. But that did not mean North American content that jobs and production would come back from Mexico to the U.S. There's nothing that required jobs to come back. Nothing. It's really about North American content is about Mexico. Don't sub out, right? You can do it in Mexico, but don't sub it out. Two phony trade deals, and nothing said about where he's going on trade. There's some indications he's going to open up his trade negotiations with the UK and Europe. Nothing there. Europe, Japan, in which he just had a verbal understanding with Japan. Both Europe and Japan are still question marks. Nothing said about where he's going, with his trade war. All right. So, very little on trade actually said, except just to, in passing, mention China and NAFTA 2.0. Well, here's the big policy issue of the last year, and we have no idea where he's going with this. Okay, where else do we have no idea? Well, how about taxes? Not a mention about his massive tax cuts and their effect, because there's really been very little effect. We've all, in 2018, we gave corporations and investors $5 trillion over a decade of tax cuts. Not a mention of that and their effects this year, because there hasn't been. Because real investment in plant and equipment has been contracting. After you give, these investors trillions of dollars, the whole argument is, that's going to result in an increase in investment in the U.S. and jobs and in the economy and so forth. Nada. Nothing. Well, he didn't go there, did he? Didn't say anything. If it was really working, he could brag about it. But he can't, and he didn't. And he didn't say anything about what he is doing to cut taxes for those 1% even further. He didn't say anything. He didn't mention the fact that just through tweaking the rules in the executive branch on loopholes, last year he gave $427 billion more in tax cuts to his investor buddies and corporations. $427 billion more. Didn't say anything about that. Or his initiatives to index capital gains, in other words, index it to inflation. So as inflation rises, they will get another 2 or 3% tax cut on capital gains revenue every year, depending on what the inflation rate is. Right, indexing capital gains—that's where he's going, and making the 10-year tax cut of 2018 worth $4.5 to $5 trillion permanent forever. That's where he's going. Plus some new initiatives too. He didn't say anything about that. Because, you don't want to say that publicly, that you're going to give your buddies trillions more, and you already gave $427 billion more, and you want to give them even more in tax cuts. They're just raiding the treasury. It's pigs at the trough. Corporations, investors are just taking everything they can in terms of tax cuts and subsidies and so forth. It's really disgusting what's going on. with the tax policy and the tax initiatives. Tax and trade. Taxes are a way of gouging the American public, shifting income from middle class to the 1%. That's what tax policy is all about. It's about the class war via taxation domestically, and trade is about class war between capitalists globally, you know? And that's what neoliberalism is. It's really about intra-class war domestically and inter-class war globally. We used to call it imperialism, you know? We used to call it class war, but we've got this term called neoliberalism obfuscating all of that now. Well, you know, that's the theme I picked up at the beginning of my book, The Scourge of Neoliberalism, U.S. Economic Policy from Reagan to Trump, just published in January. And you can read reviews of that and information of that on my blog, jackrasmus.com, and or my website. Okay, so sum up a little bit here. Traditional State of the Union speech, you know, what we've done and where we're going and new initiatives. Not much there. Not much of a State of the Union speech on trade and taxes. Well, what about some other areas that he talked about? What about this family leave? You know, he talked about family leave policy here, and we got a little glimpse of him taking credit for family leave, proposing family leave pay. Well, you know, what he didn't say is, what has he proposed? Well, first of all, it's family leave for only if you have children 6 years or younger, right? If it's 7 years old, well then, too bad, you can't take paid family leave. Oh, it's paid family leave. Oh, but there's no taxes raised to pay for it. No, how you pay for Trump's family leave provision is that you got to pay back your employer. Yeah, you can get family leave now and get paid, but the arrangement is in the future you got to pay him back, or, you know, the corporation, the company back. Wow, that is moving money around, right? No family illness eligibility here. You know, if someone over 6 years old, or your elderly parents or somebody, or you can't take family leave. Yeah, it's a phony deal, you know? It's a phony deal, just like most of these Republican proposals, in name only, so that they can lie about it and spin it when they run for office. What about Social Security? Oh, he said, we're not going to touch Social Security, right? I will protect it. I am protecting Social Security and Medicare, and I will protect it. Well, but, you know, the guy recently went to the Billionaire Club meeting in Davos, Switzerland, and he was asked, what are you going to do about Social Security and your deficits? And he said, well, we have plans for that, and I'll be talking about that in December after the election. Look, folks, they're coming after Social Security and Medicare. Because he said nothing about his trillion-dollar deficits. $1 trillion. Now, every year, as far as the eye can see, due to these trillion, multi-trillion-dollar corporate investor tax cuts, which is whacking the budget deficit, and due to his escalation of war defense spending. Those two things are really behind what's going on with the deficits, $1 trillion a year. Not a mention at all about deficits and what he's going to do about it. And, you know, some comments about what's probably his real plans for Social Security and Medicare. Oh, but he did mention we're going to increase, he touted this new Space Force, you know, a fifth military division here in the United States. You know, you got the Navy, the Marines, the Air Force, and the Army, but now we're going to have a Space Force. Nothing about how much that's going to cost, how much it's starting out to cost, how much it will cost, where he's going with that. Look, I'll tell you where he's going with it. You know, he's going to put nuclear missiles up in space so that the U.S. could attack Russia or China with nuclear missiles in a matter of minutes, maybe seconds. Yeah, that's the U.S. response to Russia developing hypersonic missiles, which, by the way, anti-missile missiles have no chance of stopping. Hypersonic, we're talking about missiles going, 15,000 miles an hour. Yeah, or something like that. And plans, Russia has plans, and actually they may even have the weapon already of what's called nuclear smart torpedoes. In other words, instead of having submarines running around the oceans, you just drop these torpedoes in the oceans, and the torpedoes can travel at hundreds of miles an hour, at least, maybe more. And they're out there waiting for a signal to actually go and target something. Yeah, roaming torpedoes. We're going to have herds of torpedoes flowing around the oceans now in the next decade. Well, you know, the answer to that threat is let's put nuclear missiles in space, right? And you got a satellite over Moscow or someplace up there, 200, 300 miles, and you can launch in, within a minute or less, you can strike some target. Well, that's where Space Force is going, folks, which puts us like 11 hours, 59 minutes, and 45 seconds before Armageddon here. All right, so not much said about that, right, except to note it. A lot of things he just sort of touched on and went beyond because it was mostly the red meat to his base speech. Foreign policy. What did he say in foreign policy? He didn't say anything about the Middle East plan that was just announced, which is just, Israel and Palestine, rejected by the Palestinians and most everybody else immediately, which is just a PR ploy here for him, for his election, and for Netanyahu's election or whatever he's going doing over there. Some fights about his opponents going after him, Netanyahu, pumping him up, right? Nothing about Iran. Well, he almost went to war with Iran. Nothing about Iran. That's a foreign policy fiasco, that's why. Just like the Middle East fiasco. Syria. He said, we destroyed ISIS. No, he didn't. The Iranians, the Russians, the Kurds, these are the forces that destroyed ISIS. U.S. took credit for it, had some observers and advisors over there. But the U.S. did not destroy ISIS. There were other countries that did. But nonetheless, a claim in that regard, a lie, an outright lie, for example. So in foreign policy, he's had no achievements really to speak of in terms of foreign policy at all. That's why he's scurrying, trying to create the impression that he did. Well, another failure was his attempted coup in Venezuela. The U.S. set up this puppet, this Juan Guaido, the guy botched it in the attempted coup here that occurred. He's not even embraced by the other oppositionists in Venezuela, but he's the U.S. puppet. And Trump actually had him show up in the gallery, right, and introduced him in the gallery. So it's a signal that they're going to go after Venezuela again, probably this year, even before the election. But no mention about the failed attempted coup. No mention about no deal with North Korea. You remember he just sort of set out he was going to do all this with North Korea, right? absolute collapse of that. Nothing achieved there. Oh, we talked about NATO. Well, NATO, you know, a few countries have upped their spending a little bit, like Greece. Mm-hmm. But he hasn't achieved anything there. He couldn't even stop the Germans from completing the pipeline, the gas pipeline from Russia. Of course, that's given him a lot of heartburn, right? The whole idea of preventing the China telecom company Huawei from closing contracts with NATO countries. Well, that's failed. UK has announced that it's going to continue with using Huawei technology and equipment to develop 5G in the UK. So, you know, the trade deals produce very little. We have this massive trade deficit. You know, nothing really changed, achieved there, right? We got the Syria and Turkey. Well, Russia has deepened its influence in both. You know, Turkey's buying Russian. It's 400 missile, anti-missile missiles here. That's irked, Trump and the U.S. quite a bit here. And, of course, Russia's entrenched now in Syria, save Syria from collapse. Nothing about that. Nothing. You know? And then we have the claims he's destroyed ISIS when he didn't, and we have this dead-on-arrival Israeli-Palestinian peace plan, right? And he did mention his assassination of the Iranian general Soleimani, right? But not that it brought us to the brink of war over there. And as I said, not much about, you know, his number one aggressive foreign policy initiative, you know, Iran, nothing about that. You know, in a typical State of the Union speech, we would have had more detail in all these areas about where things were going. Nothing. Well, what did we get? What actually did we get here? And how is it really an agitational speech? Well, what we got was a resurrection of the theme of the dangerous foreigner, the immigrant, the danger, you know, the enemy within, the danger within, the enemy, this foreign enemy, you know, classic fascist, proto-fascist appeal, right? Problems are due to these foreigners within our ranks, you know. I mean, that's what Hitler did. It's not often clarified, but, you know, Hitler's racism against the Jews, if you look at how it was formulated, it was really that the Jews, even though they were German citizens for generations, you know, they were the outsider, right? They were the invaders of the Aryan nation, right? And this idea that they were outsiders but within our ranks, you know, within our country, was the main theme. Well, who are the Jews here with Trump? They're the Latinos, the Latin immigrants, and Muslims, right? But you can't build a wall against the Muslims. You know, you have a nice physical symbol of your fight, which is the wall on the southern border. You know, and he said, "Oh, we've completed 100 miles of that wall," and which isn't much. And then our plan is we're going to fund 500 more miles if I'm elected. Okay, so we spent $10 million here on 100 miles, and it's going to go 500 more miles. Well, you know, that wall's going to cost $50 billion. That's okay. We can take it out of the mouths of single moms and their kids and cut food stamps more. He didn't mention that, but 700,000 more people were taken off of food stamps by this guy. No mention of that. But, you know, what we got was the red meat. The red meat. What's the red meat that he talked about in more detail? Well, at the heart of it was, you know, the danger within here, the Latinos. Mm-hmm. And he went on and on about sanctuary cities, you know, in the same same breath that he's talking about the wall and the immigrant, the Latino immigrant, sanctuary cities. Well, that's going to be his big target this year. And he proposed legislation to encourage his ranks, you know, his grassroots, to take action, to sue, and to protest and demonstrate, and who knows what else, against these sanctuary cities. Hmm? You know, it used to be that the bête noire of Trump was a person. You know, it was Hillary, and then it was Pelosi. But now it's an entire state, California, which is a sanctuary state, and sanctuary cities. This is the danger within, you see, people supporting the criminal enemy, the immigrant. Classic fascist themes here. And he went on and gave this very melodramatic rant about in California, immigrant, this criminal immigrant who went on this shooting spree, right? Shooting and murdering people from, you know, four or five examples of how this one guy did this everywhere throughout California. You know, by implication, it's that you caught all these immigrants and you release them and you don't turn them over to ICE, I-C-E, the federal, you know, agency here that goes after immigrants. You don't turn them over, sanctuary city. You give them sanctuary and see what they do. Melodrama, a lot of melodrama in this. You know, it's become kind of a standard now, and he's taken it to new heights in these State of Union speeches to put the reality show, put these people in the gallery in Congress and introduce them, right? Throughout the speech to create this emotional appeal. And what we got here was you know, really taking that to new heights in the State of the Union. And one of those, you know, had to do with this black, well, the first one, I believe it was this black African-American fellow who was on drugs, but now, because of Trump's Opportunity Zones policy, became a small, successful businessman. So the cameras, you know, shoot to the gallery there, and the guy stands up and waves his hands, and then all the lemmings in Congress stand up and clap. I know, lemmings meaning the senators and representatives, right? They stand up and clap. Well, that was just the first of a long string of melodramas, as I call them, gallery melodramas or reality shows, right? And it represented, and this is another important element of this SOTU speech, State of the Union speech, it represented Trump's new racist card. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, we know Trump is a racist. He's said so many times, right? Against blacks, against African Americans. But now he's in this speech, you know, he's elevating African Americans and blacks and trying to look like he's their great defender. Well, you know, that strategy is a key strategy of the coming election. He's trying to split the minority vote, which the Democrats, you know, typically win. He's trying to put down the Latinos and put up African Americans. He's trying to split African Americans off of the Democrats, particularly in the swing states, you see. Because in the swing states, he's going to lose some support of white women voters, and he knows it. So he's got to make up that margin, that loss, by pulling off some black votes. And we see that strategy that was launched during the Super Bowl, right? Remember that ad in the Super Bowl? Where he's taking credit for criminal reform, and there's this middle-aged black woman just breaking down, emotionally crying, and thanking him for the release, you know, of her relative. And he took credit for that. Of course, that was a bipartisan legislation, but he took credit for that. Well, When else has Trump ever taken credit for reforming incarceration of African Americans? Right. Yeah. You know, this is the guy that said Africa is shithole countries. Right. Yeah. But that was just the first gallery melodrama act. You know. After that, it was this mother and her young child. And they were trying to get a scholarship. You know, there's this Republican program giving scholarships to children to go to the school that they want. You know, it's a way of undermining public education. And I forget, it's called the Education Freedom and Scholarship Act, right? And Trump introduces the young girl, you know, she's about 11, or maybe she's a little older, young teenager, and her mother in the gallery again, little gallery melodrama 2.0. Mm-hmm. And he announces that I'm going to give you personally a scholarship, Jenny. I think her name was Jenia, right? Under this act, right? And oh, then, you know, they're all hugging each other and crying, you know, and thank you, Donald. Yeah, right? In other words, all you other black kids can now look to me. I will help you with a scholarship. Oh, in the same breath, he says, more money for black colleges, you see. More money for black colleges. This is a real initiative by him to split the African-American vote from the Democrats. Oh, and then there's another example of a young boy who wants to be an astronaut. Again, a young African-American kid. You know, looks like he's about 12 or something, right? And they go from there, he goes from there to introduce another gallery show, introduce his grandpa, right? A guy named Charles McGee, who's sitting next to him, who is, a veteran of Vietnam and Korea, and he's all decked out in his uniform, and he's got his medals on and so forth. And Trump announces he just made Charles a brigadier general. And then we cut to the Joint Chiefs of Staff sitting, you know, on the floor there in the chamber, which they do in these events, State of the Union. And they're clapping, you know, for Charles, you know. Very, very clever move by Trump. You know, he appeals to the seniors. You know, he appeals to the military, and he appeals to African Americans. You know, and we get typical more and more of these gallery shows. Oh, we get one gallery show here for the Latinos, and who is it? Oh, a very brief passage where the cameras cut to the gallery, and he introduces this senior officer, ICE officer, who is, ICE. This is the Border Patrol, Southern Border Patrol, who he indicates is carrying on this fight against his other Latino brothers and sisters, right? And not a word about, of course, the thousands of kids who got separated from their parents, and still haven't been found, you know, but the media has gone on to other things, you know. Trump's policy was to separate young kids from their parents when they came. This was last year. No one knows where they are. They tore these kids from their families, sent them who knows where, didn't keep records, don't know where they are. And we got thousands of young Latino immigrant kids who have been separated from their parents. Others are still sitting in comfortable concentration camps at the border. Yeah, nothing said about that, right? Okay, so he goes after Latinos, he goes after sanctuary cities, which allows him to go after Latinos, immigrants, and the Democrats, right? And California, which out California, here he comes, right? He gives some red meat bone by mentioning support for Second Amendment gun rights. He throws some more bone about school prayer. school prayer. He's going to propose legislation to allow prayer in schools. Well, that's through his political base. No mention about killings, the shootings, the kids, you know, these mass shootings, or the fact that every day there's a shooting and a killing, roughly one a day, going on in our school somewhere. Yeah. Oh, and he throws a bone to his base here, and he talks. This is his climate change policy, right? Somehow companies are going to get together with citizens and plant 1 trillion trees, you know? And I guess that's going to stop the acidification of the oceans and prevent the glaciers from melting and stop the mass fires in California and Australia. Yeah, 1 million trees, right? Drug prices. Well, he says we're going to create more competition by forcing these drug companies to publicize their prices. Well, in other words, we'll get to choose which pharma company is going to gouge us, right? Because this isn't a competitive industry, you know, by showing what prices and allegedly allowing people to choose the lowest that will force the market forces, which will reduce drug prices. That's not going to happen. And, of course, we got the lies, which are typical of an agitation speech here. The claim that GDP was the largest and best ever in the history of the company. Well, that's so blatant. You know, it's barely 2%. It's actually about what it was on average every year during the Obama recovery, quote, recovery, right? And now, after trillions of dollars of tax cuts to boost so-called investment, which didn't happen, and trade bills and trade initiatives, rather, which were designed to bring jobs back, which hasn't happened. And then he talks about jobs and the 3.7% unemployment rate. Well, that's the U-3 unemployment rate, which just looks at full-time employed workers. And it totally ignores the 60 million people who are part-time and all the gig workers who are part-time or temp, right? And then wages. Now, reiterates the other phony statistic of 3% wage growth. 3%. Well, again, you know, that's an average where most of it is skewed to the top, 10%, 5% of the labor force. Again, that statistic is only for full-time workers, not part-time workers, and is not adjusted for inflation. Look, other independent research by banks and so forth has revealed here that over half of American workers got no wage increase at all last year or the year before, over half. Well, he says, you know, wages went up 16% for the various low-wage people. Well, he didn't point out that, minimum wage was raised by Democratic-controlled blue states. The minimum wage was raised, and that's your 16%. Right? He didn't do it. Did everything he could to prevent it through his policies in the Labor Department. But yet, families are flourishing, he says, but says nothing about the fact that, well, I don't know, 60, 75% of American families have $400 or less for an emergency. They're all living, you know, paycheck to paycheck. And when the next recession comes, where are they going to be? You know? Especially since now you cut food stamps. And then the lie about pre-existing conditions. He's going to protect pre-existing conditions. Well, that was another blatant lie, you know, along with GDP and jobs and so forth. Because he's doing everything he can and has proposed all kinds of measures to piecemeal reduce pre-existing conditions. So he's lying through his teeth on that. And he says, well, you know, 180 million people want to keep their private health insurance. You know, that was an attack against Medicare for All, right, which he calls socialist, right? Well, if Medicare for All is socialist, then FDR, Roosevelt, was a socialist, and LBJ and Republicans who voted on Medicare for seniors in the 60s were all socialists. Yeah, he's trying to spin it, you know, that Medicare for All is socialism. Well, it's not. It's not socialism. It's just, you know, sane, reasonable solution to this runaway cost of health care in the United States, which is a crisis and is cutting people's consumption, you know, paying more and more for drugs and for health insurance. And besides, polls show that 70% of people with private insurance, including health insurance, want something different. They're not happy with their employer-provided health insurance, because the employers are making them pay more and more deductibles and co-pays, and their premiums are going up, and the coverage is going down. They know that. People know that. All right. So what we get are these outright blatant lies going on, throwing red meat to his base here, you know, on school prayer, on climate change, on Second Amendment gun rights, on attacking immigrants, right, on drug prices, on all of these different, hot buttons, red buttons for his base. And we got very little, as I've already said, on the real issues and what he's achieved, our lies, and not much of a picture where he's going. Well, where he's going is political agitation. Mobilize that base. Go after the Democrats now, big time, which is what he's doing, right? Immediately after, very, very clearly, he's going after folks who had testified in the Senate trial here. He's going after them. He's going after Pelosi. He's going after the Democrats. And everything is to agitate his base. Well, you agitate your base with emotional appeals, you know? With fear and hate, you know, that's how you agitate your base, and that's what he's doing here, very clearly. It's a message that domestic political warfare is going to intensify here. Right? Well, he's got the federal judiciary in his pocket now. He's stacked it. He gloated over that. Right? He's got a Senate. Which is, it's hard to describe the Republicans in the Senate except the kiss asses, you know? And they're terrified about their jobs because he's told them time and time again, publicly and with examples, you vote against me or you oppose me, and I'm going to take your head. You know, I think in one of his private statements or something to them, he actually said that your head's on a, whatever, something about that, right? He pulls no punches, you know. I'm going to get you thrown out of your career, you know, or your position in Congress. I'm going to get my base to agitate and go after you and deny you the primary vote, so you won't even be able to run. And some of those Republicans have dropped out, not running because he's threatened them, and they know they can't get the primary and win again to run again. So he's purging, you know, in good dictatorial fashion. He's purging his party, and he's purged most of it. That's why I call them Trump-publicans. They're not Republicans anymore. Well, he's got the Senate in his pocket, and he's got, you know, the worst example of kiss ass in Mitch McConnell doing whatever he wants, right? And these guys have abandoned their oath and their role as a independent check and balance institution, right? So he's got Congress and he's got the judiciary in his pocket, and because of this, he knows he can do whatever he wants. You know, you think they're going to impeach him and have another trial no matter what he does before now in 2020? No. And what we see here is, the Democrats have been repeatedly outmaneuvered, they were outmaneuvered in the Mueller report, in the Mueller affair, you know, because they relied on a guy who was a Mueller, who was only a special prosecutor, not an independent prosecutor, and who reported to a boss in the Justice Department. And, of course, Bill Barr in the Justice Department espouses, and even publicly they're now saying, that a president cannot be impeached or convicted or thrown out of office while he's in office. In other words, he is inviolable. He can do whatever he wants, and you cannot throw a president out. Well, you know, that's a violation of the Constitution on its face. That's what impeachment is all about. But you know, the Bill Barr, you know, interpretation of the Constitution means that there is no impeachment provision in the Constitution, and the president can do whatever he wants. Well, you think Trump is not now going to do whatever he wants? The Democrats blew it because special prosecutor, you know, Mueller fell in line and said, even though I pointed out all these violations, obstruction of Congress and violation of the Constitution by Trump on this Russian affair thing. By the way, you know, they could have proven his Russian affair relationship if they would only have, if they only would have interviewed Trump, forced him to come to a testimony here like they did with Clinton, right? Or Donald Trump Jr. No, they stayed. Mueller stayed away from those guys. So they blew the Mueller thing, and now they blew the impeachment thing. They should have launched the impeachment well before the time that they did, and they would have had more time to dig up more dirt if they had launched it right after the Mueller report a year ago, roughly. Okay, so the Democrats blew it. So the Democrats now are really on the defensive, and Trump is really pushing this thing, and he's going to. And you know, the whole so-to State of the Union speech is a declaration of intra-class war that Trump is going to escalate now with his base, throwing red meat to his base, going after the Democrats because the Democrats are the enemy within. They are part of the defense of the immigrant enemy. Okay, so classic agitation speech here, and that's the details of it. And really, really classic, and history will note this speech, I think, as something that's the not State of the Union speech. All right, that's it for today, and I'm sure we're going to have a lot of interesting developments next week and every week here on the political front in the U.S., and probably on the economic front. We'll be watching this global contagion from the coronavirus, global economic contagion, here with some detail next week. Okay, that's it. I'm out. Streets are screaming now.